Hello, and welcome to our program, Seniorific News, brought to you by OWL Radio and the Low Vision Resource Center. I am Patty Martin, and during the next half hour, I will be reading articles from Seniorific News, September edition, here on OWL Radio. Excuse me. Our first article, is moving or staying put the right choice? This is from the American Seniors Housing Association. Instead of moving, seniors and their adult children sometimes decide to adapt the family home to comfortably, safely age in place. This might feel less daunting than the emotional and physical toll of selling and moving, but it isn't necessarily less expensive. The costs of aging at home often include modifying the space and even hiring caregivers in addition to ongoing home ownership expenses. Is the family home the right choice? Knowing the risks and planning carefully makes the difference between long-term satisfaction and stressful surprises. Of all the choices available to seniors and their families, continuing to live in the family home can be irresistible to some, but making it work isn't as easy as it might seem. Creating a safe environment. When adults have been living in the same house for decades, it can mean out-of-date kitchens, bathrooms, and living spaces. Creating a safe, senior-friendly home involves modifying the house for accessibility, wiring it with smart home technologies, and updating appliances for safety and ease of use. Modifying the family home. Consider what it takes to make a home safer. Can you modify the floor plan to allow for easily accessible living on one floor? Hallways, bathroom, bedroom, and kitchen all need to have adequate space to allow for safe movement. Can you retrofit the bathroom to safely accommodate future needs? Bathrooms are the most dangerous rooms in the house for a senior. You'll need grab bars, a no-step shower, and extra space around the toilet for a caregiver to provide assistance. Can you upgrade the kitchen to make seated meal preparation and cooking possible? Range, refrigerator, pantry, pots and pans, everything must be accessible. Safety is paramount because fires and falls make the kitchen second only to the bathroom for injuries. Can you create 2 zero-step entrances to the home? Ramps and easy access entryways make entering and exiting easier for those with mobility problems. And in an emergency, it's critical to have more than one safe escape route. Smart homes for seniors. Technology plays an increasingly important role in keeping homes safe and convenient, and the innovations continue to advance. From simple, inexpensive alarms that turn off unattended stoves to comprehensive whole home systems that track a senior's every move. Today, you can monitor safety from across town or across the country. Upfront costs are fairly reasonable, although most plans come with monthly monitoring fees. And if it takes a variety of tech products to keep an older adult safe at home, the combined costs can take a bite out of the budget. Costs of creating a safe senior home. It adds up fast. A few common modifications and their estimated costs include monthly monitoring fees, $40 and up, smart home technology installation, $99 to $1,500, grab bars, 2 installed, $250, door widening, $800 to $1,200. Ramps and lifts, $1,200 to $20,000. Stair glide, $3,000 to $12,000. Bathroom renovations, $3,500 to $35,000. Ceiling lift, $5,000 to $12,000. Accessible master suite, $35,000 to $100,000. Providing senior care at home. After modifying the space for accessibility and adding technology for safety, what's next? It could be you'll eventually need to consider personal care and support to assist with the tasks of daily living. Here's what you need to know about hiring a professional caregiver and what to expect when you rely on a family member for caregiving. Before hiring a professional caregiver, first establish relationships with professional caregivers sooner rather than later. You need adequate time to develop confidence in their skills and compassion. Your options for hiring a caregiver include employing a caregiver you hire directly, partnering with private duty home care agency. Each option has advantages and disadvantages. You'll be responsible for screening when you recruit and hire on your own. And when a caregiver is ill, requests time off for vacation, or has an emergency of their own, you'll be responsible for adjusting the schedule. On the other hand, it typically costs less to hire a caregiver on your own. Even after you pay employment taxes, the expense can be a more budget-friendly option. Partnering with a home care agency means relying on their expertise, which is often proven by how well they manage their professional caregivers. Agencies handle all issues related to employment and can provide backup caregivers if the regular caregiver is unavailable. But there's a downside, which is the expense. Nationally, the median hourly rate for home care aides is $19. Most agencies require a minimum number of hours per visit or per month. Finally, as needed care can benefit seniors who don't require round-the-clock attention. If health needs increase, that limited care may become insufficient. But round-the-clock in-home care is expensive. Here's a helpful rule of thumb. When a senior needs 30 to 40 hours or less of combined support each week, home care can be a viable short-term solution. When the amount of care exceeds 30 to 40 hours per week, a senior living community increasingly becomes a safer, more cost-effective way. The weary family caregiver. Every year, 34 million family caregivers provide $44 billion in unpaid caregiving, according to the Family Caregiving Alliance. In most instances, it's the adult daughter who shoulders the responsibilities. This takes a toll. Family caregivers often lose wages, endure family stress, and see their health and well-being decline. The family caregiver generally spends about 20 hours each week caring for her senior loved one. Many will cut back on work hours to provide care. Many experts expect their caregiving responsibilities will be short-term, but the role ends up lasting much longer. In fact, over a lifetime, lost earnings can total $659,139. This includes $25,494 in Social Security benefits, $67,202 in pension benefits, and $566,443 in lost wages. Family caregivers report that the physical and emotional demands of caregiving cause a variety of health conditions. Making an informed senior care decision. Ask yourself these questions as you work your way through the decision process. How long will these home modifications allow you or your senior loved one to remain safe at home? Is this a viable short-term answer, or do you expect this plan to work for years to come? How financially feasible is the cost of paying for in-home care when compared with moving to a senior living community? Can the family caregiver and their spouse and children handle the physical, financial, and emotional toll this will cause? Good questions. Our next article is How Much Time Do You Need for an International Layover? Written by Sally French from the Nerd Wallet. Let me take a drink real quick. Most airlines recommend arriving at least 2 hours before domestic flights and at least 3 hours before international flights. But do you need that much time for connections between international flights? Layovers of just 30 minutes can be feasible for domestic flights, especially at small airports where the next flight might be just one gate over. But international layovers are typically far more complicated, and even 2 hours can be insufficient. Here's how to book flights with an international layover and how much time you really need. Ways to book a flight with an international layover. Let's say you're flying from Houston to Hanoi, Vietnam. There might be no direct flights between those two cities, but you could get there via layover. The most common, least risky way to book international flights necessitating a layover is by searching for flights between your departure and arrival cities. Even with no nonstops available, the airline automatically determines your layover and puts both flights on one reservation. This strategy is ideal for a few reasons. If you miss your second flight because the first was delayed or canceled, airlines will generally rebook you at no additional cost, so you're not just stranded, say, in Hong Kong on the way from Houston to Hanoi. Checked bags are less likely to get lost, as they're usually checked to the final destination. You won't need to know how long you need in between flights, because airlines won't book you less than the minimum connection time, or MCT, anyway. Minimum connection times vary by airport and sometimes even terminal. For example, the lowest MCT is just 1 hour for flights within its tiny terminal 3. According to the latest customer guide for Paris Charles de Gaulle Airport, but for certain flight combinations, the airport requires 2.5 hours minimum. On the other hand, booking two separate flights is sometimes considered a clever money move. You might find an amazing deal from Houston to Hong Kong, even if airfares to Hanoi, your final destination in this example, are exorbitantly high. In that case, you might nab that Hong Kong deal. From there, you could separately book a budget airline operating within Asia to go onward to Hanoi. But such savings are often not worth it, largely because neither airline is obligated to help you if one flight disruption causes you to miss the other. Instead, you'll likely be left in a foreign country that you never intended to visit at all. Here are a few risks to consider when booking on two separate itineraries. Flight disruptions are common. Only 77% of U.S. domestic flights between April 2022 and April 2023 arrived on time, according to the Bureau of Transportation Statistics. If you miss your second flight, it's unlikely you'll get the money back unless you booked refundable airfares or had canceled for any reason travel insurance. For flights through Europe, you'll lose the protections of EU 261, which provides compensation for delays 2 hours or more. What happens during an international layover? Depending on your risk tolerance, even 3 hours might be insufficient for an international connection. Risk-averse passengers booking two separate itineraries might budget at least a day between flights. That's because there are money steps and lines along the way that might hold you up. Arriving in a foreign country might require you to go through immigration and clear customs, even if you're only staying there for a brief layover. If you're flying on two separate itineraries with checked bags, you have to retrieve your luggage and recheck it. You'll also need to visit your next airline's check-in desk to collect your boarding pass if you can't retrieve it online. Depending on the airport, it might be a hike or a shuttle to your next gate. Then you'll have to go through security and passport control again. Make the most of a long layover. Booking international flights on two separate itineraries can sometimes save money, but if things go awry, you could end up paying far more to rebook missed flights. Mitigate that risk with a long layover, which doesn't have to be that bad. With a credit card that offers priority pass membership, you could relax in an airline lounge or just build in a few buffer days to really slow down and embrace the long layover. Our next article is COVID-19 took a toll on heart health by Lauren Neergard, AP medical writer. Firefighter paramedic Mike Camilleri once had no trouble hauling heavy gear up ladders. Now battling long COVID, he gingerly steps onto a treadmill to learn how his heart handles a simple walk. Somehow, a mild case of COVID-19 set off a chain reaction that eventually left Camilleri with dangerous blood pressure spikes, a heartbeat that raced with slight exertion, and episodes of intense chest pain. Doctors were stumped until Camilleri found a Washington University cardiologist who treated patients with similar post-COVID heart trouble. He started to see a little improvement, only to have a recent reinfection knock him down again. Well, into the pandemic's fourth year, how profound a toll COVID-19 has taken on the nation's heart health is only starting to emerge. We are seeing effects on the heart and the vascular system that really outnumber, unfortunately, effects on other organ systems, said Dr. Susan Cheng, a cardiologist at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center in Los Angeles. For up to a year after a case of COVID-19, people may be at increased risk of developing a new heart-related problem. Anything from blood clots and irregular heartbeats to a heart attack, even if they initially seem to recover just fine. Amongst the unknowns, who's most likely to experience these after effects? Are they reversible or a warning sign of more heart disease later in life? We're about to exit this pandemic as even a sicker nation because of virus-related heart trouble, said Washington University's Dr. Zayed Al-Ali, who helped sound the alarm about lingering health problems. The consequences, he added, will likely reverberate for generations. Heart disease has long been the top killer in the nation and the world, but in the U.S., heart-related death rates had fallen to record lows in 2019, just before the pandemic struck. COVID-19 erased a decade of that progress, Cheng said. Heart attack-caused deaths rose during every virus surge. Worse, young people aren't supposed to have heart attacks, but Cheng's research documented a nearly 30% increase in heart attack deaths among 25 to 44-year-olds in the pandemic's first 2 years. Some of these patients have what's known as long COVID, the catch-all term for dozens of symptoms that often include fatigue and brain fog. The National Institutes of Health is beginning small studies of a few possible treatments for certain long COVID symptoms, including a heartbeat problem. But Cheng said patients and doctors alike need to know that sometimes cardiovascular trouble is the first or main symptom of damage the coronavirus left behind. Blood flow jumps when people move around and subsides during rest, but some long COVID patients don't get enough of a drop during rest because the fight or flight symptom that controls stress reaction stays activated, Murma said. Some also have trouble with the lining of their small blood vessels not dilating and constricting properly to move blood through, she added. How big is the post-COVID heart risk? To find out, Al-Ali analyzed medical records from a massive Veterans Administration database. People who'd survived COVID-19 early in the pandemic were more likely to experience abnormal heartbeats, blood clots, chest pain, and palpitations, even heart attacks and strokes, up to a year later compared to the uninfected. That includes even middle-aged people without prior signs of heart disease. Based on those findings, Al-Ali estimated 4 of every 100 people need care for some kind of heart-related symptom in the year after recovering from COVID-19. Per person, that's a small risk. But he said that the pandemic's sheer enormity means it added up to millions left with at least some cardiovascular symptom. While a reinfection might still cause trouble, Al-Ali's now studying whether that overall risk dropped thanks to vaccination and milder coronavirus strains. A post-infection link to heart damage isn't that surprising, Verma noted. She pointed to rheumatic fever and inflammatory reaction to untreated strep throat, especially before antibiotics were common, that scars the heart's valves. But Al-Ali says there's a simple take-home message. You can't change your history of COVID-19 infections, but if you've ignored other heart risks, like high cholesterol or blood pressure, poorly controlled diabetes or smoking, now's the time to change that. And I think I might have time for one more really short article. I might be reading this fast. How to be healthy, connected, and informed. This is by Claire Irwin, Texas Health and Human Services Age Well, Live Well Coordinator. Everyone benefits from making a plan and having access to the tools needed to age and live well. Texas has about 5.1 million people over the age of 60, according to the United States Census Bureau. The Texas Health and Human Services Age Well, Live Well campaign provides educational and motivational resources for people, organizations, and community leadership to take a proactive approach to aging. The campaign uses 3 core elements, be healthy, be connected, and be informed, to shape the messaging and deliver aging and living well resources. Be Healthy, Texercise, a statewide health promotions initiative of HHS, educates and encourages people age 45 and older and communities to adopt healthy lifestyle habits. Healthy behaviors such as regular physical activity and eating healthy can prevent many of the chronic conditions often associated with aging. Visit the Texercise webpage to learn more. Be Connected. The HHS Know Your Neighbor campaign encourages Texans to form and maintain new connections with older neighbors to help reduce the risks of isolation and loneliness. Resources such as template emails and letters are provided to make creating connections easier. Start connecting with your neighbors by visiting the Age Well, Live Well webpage and clicking on the Be Connected tile. Be informed. Planning ahead using Texas Talks can help people talk about aging and needs that may arise. Every November and December, 4 new topics are presented for considering. The 2023 Texas Talks topics are caregiving in Texas, long-distance caregiving, staying connected and seeking support, and legal considerations in caregiving. Learn more by visiting the Age Well, Live Well webpage and clicking on the Texas Talks link. Building a healthy future includes finding fun ways to exercise, exploring nutritious foods, connecting with others, learning about available resources to help, and planning ahead. Learn more about Age Well, Live Well by exploring over 120 helpful fact sheets, toolkits, and issue briefs on the Aging Well Resources Forum. You have been listening to Seniorific News on Owl Radio. You can listen to Owl Radio on our specially tuned radio or by streaming on your computer or smartphone. You may also listen at your convenience on our podcast page at www.owlradio.org. And that's spelled OWLRADIO. .org. Thank you for listening. This program will be replayed after 9 p.m. this evening. This is Patty Martin saying goodbye from Owl Radio, and have a pleasant rest of your day.